I'm really excited to hear your definition of what intentional means to you.
Intentional means deliberate. It means not, I think it's the difference between being like a plastic bag, like, you know, floating down the street and like being, and saying, I actually have control and I can actually take responsibility.
Welcome to the Intentional Growth Podcast, the show that teaches you how to grow the value of a company with an end in mind. Host Ryan Tansom interviews top business leaders, authors, entrepreneurs, and other professionals who share their experience and expertise about buying, growing, and selling companies.
And we're back with another episode. This is 296, and we are real close to episode 300, where my partners, Pat Hobby and Matt Buskirk, are joining me. We're going to have a fireside chat on what does intentional growth mean? What are the things that we've learned from the show? What are other people doing in the marketplace? And then what are we going to be doing with this podcast after episode 300? And just to whet your appetite, we're going to be structuring these themes that are wrapping together two to four episodes with these mini themes where you can go and you can digest, you know, really concentrated topics where we have experts, we tee up the topic, and then we have panels. So I'm very excited for some of the stuff to come. We've got the whole rest of the year planned out for content. So very excited to take everybody onto that journey. Again, this show is on YouTube if you wanted to check it out. And then the other update is we have an intentional growth virtual cohort coming up. So it is on, the kickoff is on May 4th, and it's 4 weeks in a row. It's 90 minutes, and me, Matt, and Pat facilitate these 90-minute calls where there's 10 entrepreneurs. It's $2,000 for the training, and you go through the material on your own prior to the calls, and then we jump into the case studies, and we talk about valuations, exit options, strategic planning, finance, really how all of this stuff works so you can walk out understanding how to create value with the end in mind. So on to our episode. So I have a wonderful special guest today. Her name is Marie Tautimez, and she is the author of Keep Going, the book that she just launched. And she had a family business and that she joined after, well, and actually her book is called Keep Going. And the title, the subtitle is 15-year-old mom to visionary CEO and entrepreneur. And that's what we're talking about on today's show. I mean, she went through a lot of hard times when she had her child, but then she used all of what she learned to then jump into the family business with her brother and her dad. They grew it after, I mean, they had a lot of consistent kind of stalled growth, and then they accelerated it from hundreds of thousands of dollars up to the eight figure mark, and then sold the business. And her brother's still working there, and Marie's on to her next venture. She's an EOS implementer, and she's willing to share the entire story. And I'll tell you what, she's extremely self-aware, conscious, and she brings a lot of intentionality to her decisions and the plan that she is making. So her whole journey is summed up with, I would say, being intentional, and she's going to be sharing it with everybody on the show today. So thanks everybody for tuning in, and I really hope you enjoy this interview with Marie.
Sponsored by Arcona's Intentional Growth Digital Course, Ryan Tansom and Pat Hobby show you how to shift your mindset away from solving for annual income to focusing on strategies that create long-term value, giving you the freedom and choices to take control of the future destiny of your business. Accelerate your knowledge with 36 videos and dozens of exercises that combine decades of experience buying, growing, and selling companies. Learn more by going to arcona.io or visiting the show notes.
Mary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Ryan. I'm well. How are you?
Good. You just have to tell everybody where you're at, because this is total commitment right now. And we had a little prep call, make sure everything worked, but this is awesome.
I am sitting in Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, and I found a little quiet spot that people will probably walk into, whatever this room does behind me. So, and there may be voices around, so I apologize, but yeah.
We were just laughing. There's nothing like the person at the airport that's having a whiskey diet at like 6:30 in the morning, right while other people are working. You just, I always am like, where is that story and what is going on?
Right.
Anyways, I'm way digressing. Okay, so I am super excited for this conversation, because you've got such a unique background, from a family business to an EOS implementer. And I just the 10 minutes that we were spending, I know that there's a lot of different topics that we could definitely unpack. But for the listeners that aren't familiar with you, maybe just give you a basic introduction, what you're doing now, and then maybe introduce the book that you just ended up writing.
Yeah, I think the book explains it really well. So I'll start there. The book is called Hashtag Keep Going. And it's my story of going from a 15-year-old teenage mom to a successful entrepreneur and CEO. So it's like a pretty simple nugget of, you know, imagine everything that's, you know, involved in being a 15-year-old teenage mother, ultimately on welfare, you know, raising a child 100% on my own, to having the opportunity of a lifetime, which was also when I was 17, my dad had purchased an insurance agency. At the time, I was a receptionist at a car dealership. And he said, well, if you could be a receptionist there, why don't you come over here? So I did that in his company. And then, you know, maybe 5 years in, started realizing the opportunity that it was. And I have a twin brother, and he and I were in the business together at the same time. And we just started waking up to the possibility. Actually, the reason we woke up is because my dad decided that he was going to retire. Mm. And Paul and I are like early 20s, and we have no business running a business. And my dad has no business retiring, but he was like, maybe he had heard some podcast, or no, at the time there weren't podcasts. Maybe he'd read somewhere.
There was an 8-track somewhere
that said, you should live your dream life and your business should run and you know, create a life for you. So his stepping away was premature, but it really helped Paul and I wake up. Like, we went from being in the passenger seat of the business, you know, where you're just like, maybe you need to pay attention to where you're going. Maybe you don't. It doesn't really matter. To, oh my gosh, you know, what are the levers? What do we need to pay attention to? So my dad came back in, which was the right move. But Paul and I like became, you know, woke, whatever. Yeah, and we're like, oh, okay, I get what's going on here. So about 13 years into running the business, we finally started getting it. And we were stuck at like $350,000 in revenue. We just hit the ceiling. And we just started learning the mechanisms to grow, and we were able to grow the company over the next 7 years up to 10 million. So there was just like this magical, like, okay, we're getting it. And, you know, so we ultimately sold the company in October 2020 for 16 million, which was a really phenomenal opportunity considering where we started. I left the organization actually prior to the transaction. And became the US implementer. Yeah, I wouldn't take full credit that it spurred the transaction, but it certainly moved that conversation along. It was just time. Like, I had hit my own ceiling in the business. Uh-huh. I was unfulfilled. I'd been there for 22 years and I was constantly learning and growing, and I felt like I had enough vision for Phoenix, all of Phoenix, and I was stuck in this teeny tiny company. And so it was just time for me to move on. So
that's awesome. That's kind of story. And then for the listeners that just heard that, that's why I said there's a lot of ground we could cover in this short hour. So I want to go back, Mary, to, like, you know, I can't even imagine. I mean, I've got twin, we didn't get this in the prep code, but I got twin girls that are 5.5. So yeah, the fact you're a twin and God bless your parents, because it was hard. It's been hard.
Yeah, no kidding.
What? I can't even imagine being a parent at that age. But then you just kind of skip from that challenge to then all of a sudden you're in your early 20s and you're jumping into the business. Like, what were some of the things that, how did you get to the point where you had that opportunity? And how did you manage that process so that way when that opportunity came that you were able to seize it?
Well, I'd say that, you know, my parents actually did something that's super unconventional, and I think it was the right move. Sorry, like, the sun is like right in my eyeballs right here. Like, I can't.
It's because you're going to say something really important, right?
I'm just noticing how bright it is. So my parents did something really unconventional, and they said, you know, you're going to have the baby. Like, when I got pregnant, they were, you know, obviously there's three options. You keep the baby, you have an abortion, or you give the baby up for adoption. Abortion wasn't for me. That wasn't an option. Adoption wasn't an option. And so, like, right away, I just faced whatever that was. But my parents said, you are 100% on your own. Like, we will never watch the baby. You can live in our house. We will provide food. We will provide, you know, clothing, which is great. Like, that's actually really great.
That's
so you are 100% on your own. So, and my parents said, by the way, if you want to use anything other than cloth diapers, then you need to go get a job and you need to pay for diapers yourself. And so I got a job a month after I had the baby because I was not going to use cloth diapers. So there was so much in that journey, like you said, like the first, you know, 6-7 years of raising a child as a single mom, that really gave me grit and tenacity to that I think kind of turned around in business, because the moment I found out that I was pregnant, there's this really great story I heard from somebody once, which is the story about the bison. So like a bison, when it's facing a storm, will turn towards the storm and instinctively walk through it, knowing that if you do that, you'll get to the other side faster. A cow, on the other hand, will turn and walk away from the storm and then eventually like hang out in the storm much, much longer. And ever since I got pregnant, like I was like, I told my parents probably a half an hour after I found out. Everything has always been like, just face it. Whatever it is, just turn around and face it, because it's just going to take too long to go the other way. And we're going to get there anyways. So the faster route is just facing it. So I'd say that some of those instincts and disciplines that I had to deal with super early on, and I had to grow up and I had to take responsibility super early on. As a leader in business, one of the things I would always say is that you have to lead by example and you have to take responsibility. And I think that I got those lessons really, and you have to be tenacious and you have to get back up when you feel like crying and, you know, you're suffering. So there's so much of that early experience that definitely contributed to my abilities as a leader.
That's a fantastic visual. Like I've never heard that before. So that's, and now I'm picturing the cover of your book. And did it ever cross your mind to have a bison on the cover of your book?
Or, no.
I was like, cause you got the ship and the storm coming after you. And I'm like, so how did that experience, like when you took over originally with your brother, when your dad first decided to retire, like how did that manifest in like how you handled that situation?
Well, I would definitely say that I was kind of asleep at that time. Like I just didn't, you know, I was just kind of a dumb kid that just didn't realize like what was in front of us. And so what I started to do was I started to become a specialist in the product and service that we were offering. So I became really obsessive over what we were doing and how we could do it better, how we could help more people at scale. I wasn't thinking in those terms. I know those are super common terms right now, but I was thinking, And I would say I'm a hard worker, but I'm also lazy. So every time I do something, I'm like, that's too much effort. That's too much effort. And so everything is about finding efficiency. And so I was just obsessed with becoming an expert and then finding the most efficient way to do things.
Super interesting.
And so that's when we started. And then my brother and I moved into our own specialty. So I was specializing in one product service line. He was specializing in the other. And my dad was a great partner too. The three of us were a really phenomenal trio with very complementary skill sets. And so we all just kind of took the ball and worked.
And went with the products. And because was this a personal insurance or property casualty or what?
No, it's really sexy. It's Medicare insurance and long-term care insurance. And so my specialty was long-term care and my brother's is Medicare.
Well, now everybody's going to be calling you just about long-term care questions because of how complicated
that is. I'm still passionate about it. I still think it's so important, but yeah.
So back to your comment about you, your dad, and your brother being a good trio. So I want to hear more about that and how you guys manage that. And I want to layer in a concept. You know, on EOS, you got the owner and you got the visionary and then you got the integrator. And then there's a thing called the owner's box. You know, we've got this concept in our training that we call the ownership role versus the management role, where you get a paycheck for what you're supposed to be doing. That's market wages. And then you've got this thing called a business that's that you've got equity and it's an asset. And I've seen so many times where the people have so much conflict because there's not clarity in those roles. Mm-hmm. How did you guys handle it? Did you guys have that kind of clarity or did you guys get there somehow?
Yeah, my dad always treated the business first of all, the business was our family connection. So it's kind of sad in that way. Like we didn't do a lot outside of the business and we were always extremely professional. So we always called my dad by his first name. We never called him dad in the business. That's not saying that's right or wrong. Uh-huh. That's just how we did it. And we only lived in our professional roles and if we argued points, you know, if there was an issue, I'll use my EOS pen. we would always just take this as the issue. Like it was never personal. So I don't know how we managed to do that, but we would argue as passionately as family members do about something. Uh-huh. You know, it's a very safe place to argue. You're not going to lose somebody's love if you have a disagreement. But it was always about the issue. And so afterwards, we would just fight toe to toe for whatever it is that we believed was in the best interest of the business. And then we would sort of do what EOS teaches you to do, which is to disagree and commit. You know, like if I may not agree with you, consensus is not the goal. We aren't going to get anywhere if we're aiming for consensus. It's just, you know, what's your perspective? What's your perspective? What's mine? All right. I disagree, but I commit. And we want to commit even if we disagree, because we're all on the same team headed towards the same basket. So if I don't commit and say, what can I do to help you? Even though I disagree, what can I do to help you win at this? Then I'm essentially tripping you as we're running down the court towards the same basket. That makes no sense. And we just sort of instinctively knew these things. I don't know if we like had some other lifetime where we ran businesses or what it was, but we just knew that this is the right way to do it.
Well, and it is very interesting of how, like you said, instinctively and how much you knew to do that. Because, you know, when I see like that scenario go the wrong direction, is one person is using the ambiguity of the situation of whose game is it? Well, it's my business, right? How many, how many family members and how many EOS implement, how many EOS sessions you've been in when that comment comes up, where it's my business. It's like, okay, well, then all of a sudden people go into their own survival mechanisms of like, I'm going to do what I can in this one little pocket that I can control. So like, was there something in your family structure? I mean, you already alluded to that your parents, you know, said it's you're on your own. So like how, like, was it something that your dad or some core value you guys had as a family member, like, hey, this is all ours? Was there clarity on what that meant to you and your brother? Or was it just, where did that loyalty come from?
We never talked about it. The words were never spoken. Well, this is my business. We always just felt like it was our business. And Paul and I, my brother, we never had, not for many years, did we have an idea that we would have ownership and what that would look like. We just did it. Like, I don't know. Eventually we did. And eventually it was something that we had to really push for, because it was always this, like, for 10 years, it was like, oh yeah, you guys are going to be owners. You guys are going to be owners. And I'm like, where's the document that I signed that says that? Because like in a family, you could let that go on and on and on.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, so we finally got everything penned in at one point, but we just weren't worried about that. Like, we were so passionate about delivering so much value to our clients and to our customers that we just never really spent time focusing on ourselves. And I would say that my brother and I both gave up a lot. We sacrificed a lot of our own lives and family life to make all of that happen, probably with the notion that that would pay off someday. But the other good thing about twins, and you might learn this with your girls, is that there's just this natural competition, and it's not unhealthy.
Oh, I'm well aware of that already.
and in the house, it starts with for mom and dad's love, right? It starts with for mom and dad's affection and attention. I don't know that that changed a whole lot into adulthood and into a business. And so, but that natural competition was really healthy for the business, because the competition was, I'm going to learn this. Well, if you're going to learn that, then I'm going to learn this, you know? And so it was really more about learning and growing and self-development. And then we would always take each other with. So if I was doing something, I'd be like, Paul, come on, I'm going to learn this thing. Like, let's learn this together. So it's super cool. So fortunate to run a business with my womb-mate, is what we call each other.
Womb-mate. I love it. How did that transcend into the rest of the culture and your employees?
They all had this help first mentality too. Like, they all had this loyalty and dedication to what we're doing. And Paul and I, you know, when I say lead by example, we worked harder than anybody. So we put in the hours. I would also say too, as far as lead by example, something I wished we'd done differently was lead by example on what it is to have a balanced life, because we didn't do that. So neither did anybody else. So we were always really unhealthy, overweight, just like eating at our desks, never taking time off, like never taking vacations. And so as go you as a leader, so goes the rest of your team. And so it's great that we're setting that work ethic, but we're also setting that imbalance ethic as well. And so I think it's really important that we, you know, be an example of what it is to take good care of ourselves and love ourselves and like put ourselves first, because we didn't for a long time, and that's something I wish I'd done differently.
What does that mean to you? So like, maybe give us the story of what before, when you said you didn't used to do that, and now how are your behaviors and how is your life and business different on both sides of that story?
It's funny. I just did this thing yesterday with our head coach at EOS Worldwide, And the question is, what was your EOS life? So an EOS life, it's doing work you love with people you love, making a huge impact, being appropriately compensated, and having time for other passions. So that's the EOS life. So I had to rate each one of those, and like my before I became an EOS implementer and where it is now. And it was low. It was very, very low in it, not in people I loved. I was working with people I loved, but in some of the other things, time for other passions. I was being appropriately compensated, but I would say that was not where I wanted to be. Like I wanted to be
appropriate to what your potential could be, right?
It was right, exactly. But I didn't have time to do anything. Like I joke, but I'm not kidding. I didn't have time to eat. Like I didn't have time to do anything. Now in my current life, like I'm doing like this week, the retreat that I'm going on right now is 4 days just learning and growing. That's my EOS life. Anytime I get to go to a conference and learn at Tony Robbins conference, or, you know, last weekend it was a retreat with girlfriends in La Jolla, California. None of that stuff ever existed before. And so I prioritize it. Like we went in to the whole year and we scheduled out our calendar for the whole year so that, because if you don't plan it and you don't schedule it and you don't block it out now and really truly adhere to it, it's like a bucket with water that just starts filling in because you didn't create the space, you know, you didn't fill the bucket in with your concrete first, and now the water can't get in. It's like this is your concrete space for you and your family and your health and your marriage. And so
I want to expand on that, because the analogy I always go to is years ago at our church, they had this, you know, it was like the big rocks, then the pebbles, then the sand, then the water. You heard that, where it's like you got like kind of your cornerstone. So using that kind of concept, Mary, is like, we can always work more. Right. So then what are the things that you just refuse to sacrifice now? And how does work and the time that you devote to work fit within that?
So I refuse to sacrifice my own personal health and mental health. So I've suffered from depression from, you know, just not putting myself first and not taking good care of myself. And you can really, you know, I would say like there were periods of time where I couldn't peel myself off the couch, and I only had full pedal to the metal gas, and I would just go until I was totally gassed out. And then I would need like a week to recover, 2 weeks, or like take the holidays. And like, it was like, I'm doing nothing because I have nothing left. Mm-hmm. And so then my family's always getting scraps and leftovers. So now I get to take my kids to school every day. I didn't, you know, that I'm not in session. Mm-hmm. I'd never got to do that before. I get to pick them up from school. I get to take them to jujitsu. Like my family comes first. My husband, it's been hard. I mean, I've been building this other business now for the last two and a half years. And I would say that it's been really hard, because what happens is you may leave whatever you're doing. Maybe you sell your company and you go on to the next thing, and you can't help but do the same thing again, because it's like hardwired in you. So I can't say that I have it mastered, but I'm trying really hard to, and I have an assistant now, and my husband's in my business as well now, where they're helping me have the boundaries, and they call me out and they're like, Mary, you said this was important to you and you're doing it anyways. And I'm like, you're right. Okay. You know, yes, so having people around you that love you enough to tell you you're full of it.
Well, and I think about like, you just, I love what you said, because I agree with you. And like some context for me is I was at this conference recently, and they had this, it was a small business conference, all privately held, all like EOS type businesses. And they actually had this public company CEO come talk, you know, kind of like a stretch, like, why are we doing this? And I listened to his, so some guy got up and kind of in the, he didn't say the EOS life or anything, but like kind of in the balance, the integrated, like well-run bit life, like you're talking about. He asked him like, what did you have to sacrifice when you're up there? Explain like how, or it wasn't what did you have to sacrifice? It was like, how did you do that without sacrificing it? And his answer was like, I actually thought, I'm like, that's just such bullshit. Like he goes, I was there for the big things. And I'm like, what a bunch of crap, man. Like, so you were there for like four things for your kids, that you had five kids. And I'm like, well, what happened? Like, of course anybody could get there if you torch everything on the way. And like, hopefully like with, I know EOS life and other things that you're talking about, we're starting to measure and monitor other things that are just besides revenue or your net worth, because it's like, to what end? I don't know. That was just my own comment, because I think it's so hard.
Yeah, and I think businesses are going to be forced to now that the pendulum has swung over to the advantage of the employee. So businesses are going to be forced to acknowledge the whole person and the fact that they're parents, or the fact that they are taking care of an aging parent, or the fact that they have a health condition, or the fact that they have...
And it's important to deal with it.
And it's important. And so that's, I think that's a beautiful thing that businesses are going, they're going to be, you know, unfortunately, a lot of things don't happen until we get strong-armed into it. And I think that that's going to happen now. So, and I, and to our point earlier, like, okay, great job setting an example of how to, you know, a person could say, I'm doing this for the good of my family. Like, you're welcome for the trust fund that I've now created for you. You know,
and here's $1 million for therapy for the next 20 years.
Exactly. Here's $1 million for all the therapy of you trying to be enough to get my attention. So, like, which is exactly what's going to happen. So, in Tony Robbins, something that he talks about at every conference that I've been to, and I've been to each, not every con, I haven't, I've been to every type that he has, I've been to every one that he has. And one of the things he talks about is which parent, whose love did you crave the most? And it was always the parent who wasn't there. And it could be that the parent that wasn't there because they were working. It could be the parent that wasn't there because they passed away. It could be the parent that wasn't there because it doesn't matter what the reason is. Their absence creates this void. And then the story that gets filled in as a child is, well, who would I have to be? What do I have to do to try to get them to come and be with me? Mm-hmm. And so that becomes our programming and our operating system for the rest of our life. And even after our parents pass away, it's still the operating system of who do I have to be enough for my dad's love or my mom's love or whoever isn't present. And I'm the parent who isn't present. So I'm conscious of this going, oh my gosh, like,
what am I doing? You
know, right. So like, I'm trying to create security for my family and myself because women, our top needs are safety, which is financial safety, physical safety, and being heard. And for men, the top two needs, I think, is being appreciated and respected or something like that. So like, it's understanding, like, I'm trying to create that for myself because I have this deep-rooted belief that if I don't create that for myself, no one else will.
Yep.
And that belief has served me up until now. It is not going to serve me into this next phase of my life. And I'm still trying to figure out, like, well, then who am I if I'm not this hustler who's, like, making stuff happen and, you know, like, so it's a new story and it's hard.
And I want to take that because, like, that concept, Mary, is like, so I don't know if you've read Bo Burlingham's book, Finish Big. And that was like the total life changer for me because I read it after we sold and I was like, damn it. I mean, his whole thing is, you know, 75% of people are not happy after they sell because they don't know who they are, what they want from their business and why. But what you just said is more concrete of like, so like when I think about the hundreds of interviews that I've been through on this, the amount of people when the business is gone, they were filling the need that you just described, that void, with their business, which is why they're miserable afterwards. So like to take yours on the men, this is just literally anecdotal from what my personal experience is. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of men, they get all the appreciation, the respect from their employees that have to essentially respect them. And then also they get all the revenue and how many employees they have and all the stuff. It's like, then they get to tell everybody about that because they're craving that. And women have got the different kind of satisfaction that they're getting out of it, but they don't know the relationship that the business is filling that and how it's filling that void. So when it's when they're after on the other side, they're going, what's missing? And it's not just the cash flow necessarily. It's like there's something else. And it's so interesting to watch how many people, regardless of how many zeros are at the back of their net worth, struggle with the exact same issue. I don't know if you've experienced that or you and your brother went through it yourself.
Yeah. Well, my brother's still in the business. So he went along with the acquisition and he was, and he's great. He's like living his best life still in the business. That's kind of his baby.
That's awesome.
But something, you know, going back to Tony, so he talks about the six human needs. You and I talked about that ahead of the call today, but whatever your top needs are and that are being met at a high level. So those top three needs. So we talked about it, certainty, uncertainty, significance, love and connection, growth and contribution. Those are the six human needs. And whichever of those needs are getting met at a high level, we are going to do that all the time, whatever that is. And in business, our human needs are met at such a high level, especially our needs for significance. right? Yep. Like, yep. I have a high degree of need for significance. And I was super embarrassed to discover that. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know why that is, but it just is. And so in the business, that's met at a high level. And you go home, I love it. Indra Nooyi, she's the former CEO of PepsiCo. She's like all over the place right now. She's amazing. And she says, it was on the Freakonomics, a Freakonomics podcast.
I love that podcast.
When you go home, it's so good. She's like, when you go home at night, you can take your crown and you can leave it in the garage because those kids and your spouse could care less.
100%.
And so, like, when you go home, that need for significance is not being met at a high level. It just, because we have to shift our focus and our attention to making other people significant. And we should be doing that, but we're not very good at it. And so
Super
I think starting that transition earlier to saying it's not all about me and us. And there's also this other component where we're like, aren't you grateful? Like how hard I'm working. And it's like, you know, but they're working really, there's this other reality that's happening over here. And so the more we can do to drop into our hearts and just love and see the people. I feel like, so one of my core values is see everyone. And I mean it from like an avatar, like I see you, Ryan. It's why I ask you, I'm curious about you. Like, thank you for being curious about me. I'm curious about you. I want to see you. And then I want you to go home and I want you to see those girls and I want you to see your wife and I want you to go to church and I want you to see like each person being so deeply curious about what can I do to see them and help them feel seen or appreciated right now. And then doing that in our businesses too. But we get to a certain status point where we're like, don't you know who I am? You know, like this ridiculousness. And we lose our humility and that true love and giving out. So
to go back to like your business, people like kind of have to when you own it and you're the executive, right? It's the whole power dynamic. So like, it's not actually that much work to get that satisfaction feeding that you're talking about. Well, you get home, your kids might not like you at all. And like, you can't force them into a review where they're sacrificing something, you know, like you might take away their cell phone or their, you know, Xbox or something, but that's about it. It's about all threats. But it's so interesting what I think of is so important, Mary, about this is that understand, that's why our first principle is your drivers, because understanding this is so important to then actually build a plan that doesn't, where the ceiling is actually your own psychology. And I don't know, like if you see that so many times where it's like so obvious to you as an implementer, you're sitting there with people and it's like, this is a psychology issue, not necessarily a business issue.
Yeah. The first thing that Tony Robbins says at Business Mastery is it's 20% skill and talent. The game of business is 20% skill and talent, 80% psychology. And you are the chokehold as the owner, as the founder, you are the chokehold on this business and your own beliefs and the things that you brought into this business from childhood and the things that you brought in, you know, we're just a bunch of messy humans coming together to try to make a business go. A bunch of messy humans trying to meet our own needs, trying to take care of our families, and then trying to do it through this tool or this mechanism and trying to provide value. And, you know, so I think that it's about really just understanding that the people. So what I see when I come into a session room is the more stressed people get, the more I see almost a childlike version of that person. And so a good friend of mine wrote the book called The Kid and the King. And it just talks about there's like our... He used to be a Tony Robbins coach. Now he's but he's a life coach outside of the organization now, and which is how I met him. And he talks about how, like, have you ever had that experience? Like, say you go back to a high school reunion and all of a sudden you are exactly in the same positioning.
You just gave me a stomach ache, actually, even me thinking about my high school reunion.
It's that, or maybe going and seeing going to a family reunion and like, you're still it isn't that other people are keeping us in that position. It's that we're keeping ourselves in that position. We are showing up as that little boy or that little girl in that moment. And we do that sometimes. And all of a sudden we don't know what words to say, what language, like we forget that we've had all these experiences and we have all the capacity and capability to show up as our king or queen adult selves, but we drop into this little childlike version of us because all of those versions of us still exist. And those are the people that are showing up at a leadership team table. sometimes it's that little boy and that little girl that's like, somebody says something and it triggers them. And all of a sudden they're a 9-year old who doesn't have the language or the capacity to like solve a problem. And there's this invitation to understand and recognize when that's happening and just to call back up the king or the queen to like, okay, remember you are this person. And it's why, you know, I love what you said about the drivers, knowing the drivers. Know thyself. Know thyself is like one of the most important things that you can do. And when you start to go get coaching and counseling and you understand the things that trigger you and you understand why when your coworker behaves a certain way, it takes you right back to this other experience.
Exactly.
And you know, managing your own emotions and understanding your own emotions and triggers and how you're showing up, as well as your Colby, your DISC assessment, your Myers-Briggs, your Strengths Finders, do all of them, do all of it, not all at once, but learn Enneagram, learn about yourself so that you know how to better communicate and you have better language to communicate your needs and to communicate, you know, oh my gosh,
the self-awareness. Self-awareness is like, first of all, it's very rare, but when you find and you interact with someone, it's very obvious. And by the way, you go into their culture, I can only imagine, and I've seen it myself, where like, I mean, it's just obvious when you have the self-aware leaders because it just manifests itself all over the place. I want to take everything that you just said and then layer that onto, I'm going to get this back onto the business side. When you and your brother and your dad were signing that, you said you got to a point where you actually signed a contract or the, I don't know if it was a purchase agreement or whatever that was. Mm-hmm. Like, did your dad, like how, I'm going back to like, it's so unique of how how clear those roles were and how all this was for you guys. So like, how did you take, you know, knowing that you were a family and when you're sitting down, how did you guys structure that? And what was the communication like to all get on the same page? Because that can really set a triggering or a set of dominoes that don't go the right direction.
You know, I don't know. Maybe we should have negotiated for more. I don't know. But my dad came to us and said, hey guys, here's your percentage. This is what your mom and I think is fair. And Paul and I said, okay. I don't know. Like, I don't know if we, you know, I have no idea.
How did you get to that point though? So if that was very clear, how did you get to the point where your dad and your mom got ready and you guys, like everybody was on the same page with this is now the time?
Well, my dad, if I'm honest, is this a safe place? Is this just you and me talking? So we were at dinner one night and my dad said, I'm just going to take my glasses off because then I think that will help with my back. So my dad said, hey guys, we're really excited. We're giving you, you know, we figured out your shares in the organization. And I remember they wanted us to be celebratory about it. And I remember being super frustrated. And I was also probably 3 glasses of wine in. So I had some guts that I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. And I said, it means nothing. And I was just pissed off. And they were like, what?
Whoa.
And I said, it means nothing. I'm like, you've been talking about this for 10 years or 12 years. I'm like, until I sign a document, it means nothing. And really what I was feeling is that I have given you my life. Like I have put this business before my family, before my health, before, and I was just, I had reached, you know, a breaking point and I was just really frustrated. And I want to say we sat down to attorneys within the next 2 or 3 weeks and got it all, you know, mapped out.
Your dad, I can see your dad. I hear you, Mary. I hear you. Got noted.
They were surprised because you know how like you have this expectation of gratitude or appreciation. Like you go to tell your wife something and you're like, hey, honey, and she's not responding the way that you were hoping she would. That's probably how that went for them. But I just, you know, Paul and I were always very amicable and like hardworking and just, I had reached a point of like frustration and that's okay. I think, you know, you don't make change in your life and things don't happen until you get pissed off a lot of times. If things are just a dull pain, you're like, well, this kind of sucks. You're not going to make a shift. You're not going to make a change. And so you, it's almost like emotional leverage to, you know, to tap into.
And roll the dice. Yeah. So then when you said you were plateaued in the few hundred thousand or top 6 figures for a long time. And where did the breaking point come there where you just said enough? Like what was going on where you were like in search for something else? And then how did that translate into the growth?
It was totally by accident. What happened was, is my product line was long-term care insurance became very unstable as a marketplace. And I was seeing the indicators in underwriting and pre-qualification and not getting cases placed. And like things were just changing and shifting. It turns out like they were offering 5% compound inflation guarantees on contracts, even though no one was earning 5% compound anywhere. So it was like things just had to shift and change in benefit structures. And then each week was like gloom and doom, Mutual of Omaha, John Hancock, all these big name companies were starting to shift how they were doing business. Rate increases were happening and I couldn't get business placed and people were dropping off like flies. And I'm like, what are we even doing here? And I looked over at my brother's side of the business and he was having a ton of success in Medicare because Medicare, the laws had changed and rules had changed in 2005, 2006. And by this time, it's now 2013. So he had done a really great job of building his side of the business. And I thought, you know what, even though I had just had a record year in long-term care sales, so this is that's an interesting thing because people might look at that and go, but, you know, and I decided to shut it down. But again, I had just hired two people and we had record sales. And I was like, oh, and what happened was I had a baby. And on my maternity leave, I had this time to think and I had a clarity break. And I was like, oh, we need to drop this. And I need to turn around and support my brother infrastructure wise. Wow. And so I shut down long-term care complete and took my two new team members and said, I know you guys came on for this. You guys are the right people. We have these other seats. Do you want to do that? And so they moved over into those seats. And then we focused 100% as an organization on one product focus. And that product focus really was so powerful because 100% of the energy of the business was solely into that. And so one of the things we teach in EOS is core focus. Like what is the one thing that you can do better than anybody else? And that became our thing. So I became an integrator at that point for my brother. And I was like, what are your issues? What are your problems? And then I would turn around and create the technology. Like we were in an Access database. I moved us into Salesforce. We were just everything. We were like, we had literal punch cards and like, I was looking at the paychecks. Yeah. So like, you know, just all the things infrastructurally to help support the growth that we were experiencing in that side of the business. And that's when it started to take
that's
off.
The girl in like, and I'm thinking, okay, so at the beginning of this conversation, you talked about how competitive you two were and the fact that you're a visionary and you just told me that you decided to shut your division down, be secondary to your brother and the integrator. So I'm confused. And how did you handle that?
Well, we didn't have EOS at the time, so we didn't know anything about visionary integrator, who's at the top. We didn't have any structure. Right about then, we also got in a leadership team. My dad did a really smart thing and he said, you know, I think you guys are doing great, but I think that you need other people around you that have more education, more experience. And so he brought in a CFO, a graduate of Thunderbird School of Business. We brought in an operations person. She has, like, she's working towards her MBA. So she has the education and she had the experience and came from the industry. And so all of a sudden we had a leadership team. We didn't know that's what we had, but we had a leadership team and it was amazing. And so right about then, my dad said, I'm going to step down as CEO. And I could see what was going to happen. I could see that my brother was going to get put into that seat automatically because he's taller and he's a guy. I don't know. But like, I felt like our skill sets were very complementary. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, no, I think we could be co-CEOs. And so I presented that case and it makes for a really great story too. Branding wise, it's like, oh, twins, co-CEOs. Okay, cool. That worked. And what I told my dad as soon as I got into the seat was, I'm actually underqualified for this. And I know that, but I'm going to work like hell to get qualified. And that's when I signed up for Business Mastery for the first time. I signed up for Vistage. I signed up for, like coaching. I was getting personal development coaching from a Tony Robbins coach at the time. Like, I just poured into myself and what I would do is I would tell the business, hey, I want to do this thing. I'm willing to fund 50% of it if you'll fund the other 50% because you're going to benefit, right? And so I negotiated that at each next level of growth and, you know, invested in my own growth and development as well as the business.
That's awesome. And how did you, so as you guys are then growing, what along that journey decided, like, what was the triggering event where the conversations shifted from, like, and I'm curious what the conversation shifted from, but somehow the conversations usually shift from just growing and like putting in your next goals to what are we going to do with this long term? How did that evolution happen for you guys?
So there was a lot of industries where dads are retiring, uh-huh. You know, like it's just that we're just like at that golden age. I'm sure you're seeing that with a lot of businesses.
Every industry.
Every industry is like dads retiring. And so my dad was no different, and there were a handful of options. And so we started to kick around the idea of being acquired, probably 2 years before we actually did it. We were like, no, we had a couple, you know, we were just like a couple of like testing the waters conversations. Uh-huh. We didn't like it. And so we were like, nah, we'll stay in it. So we ran it for another 2 years, and then it was just clear that my dad needed an exit, and the business had grown so significantly that neither of us could afford to buy it. You know, it was just not, and for him to get what he deserved. And so acquisition was really the only option. And we all just were in alignment about that. I think we were all ready for a payday. Like we, you know, given 22 years of our life, and we're like, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like a good idea. So that's what we did.
That's super, super interesting. And so to challenge you a little bit too, is that we couldn't afford to buy it. And that's exactly what I thought, which is why we sold it. And now I know that that's not the case, because you could do an ESOP. You could, you know, get a different investor, a private equity firm to come in and support you. Like, did you look at other options like that, that could have potentially solved some of your personal and financial goals? And just one last comment on this, 'cause like, that's really what I think. And I'd love to hear how you guys, or how you went through your personal goals and all the things we've talked about in your life design compared to the financial decisions that were in front of you. Because I think they're completely convoluted sometimes. And a lot of people, when you separate them, they can be a little bit clearer on how they all interact together.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I know we considered ESOP back in 2017, long before we were considering being acquired or selling or anything like that. And my dad, I wasn't a part of that, and I don't know why he and our CFO said no. They didn't want to go with that model for some reason. I don't know what the reason was.
Just curious.
And then private equity just didn't have a good reputation, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, people are going to come in, and we're going to just become numbers, and that wasn't what we wanted either. And didn't feel like we really cared about our employees and didn't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the company that we ended up getting acquired by is PE backed, but they are a perfect strategic, uh-huh. Like they totally improved our company's ability to do things we could have never done before because of their network. And so it just worked out that way. It's a really good question. I know we considered multiple options. The other thing too, if I'm honest, so as I was sharing earlier, I left before that whole transaction happened, uh-huh, uh-huh. because my heart wasn't in it. So I'm not like, oh, how can I buy this now? Like I was ready to.
You were not ready to. Like, wait a second, my heart's not here, and it's going to cost millions of dollars to stay into it. Yeah. Got it.
That wasn't an option for me.
Well, how was that conversation going with your brother and your dad? Like, and like maybe give us some color behind why was your heart not in it, and what was your process to figuring that out and making the decision to leave?
My heart wasn't in it because I was 100. So when we went to Business Mastery, sorry, I keep going back to Tony Robbins. He's just one of the biggest influences of my whole life. When we went to Business Mastery on the first day, he says, okay, you're one of three things. So, you know, we talk about visionary integrator, whatever, owner's box. In Business Mastery, he says, either you are an entrepreneur, a manager, or an artist. And so Tony Robbins is an artist. Without him, the art doesn't get created, right? Like there's no Tony Robbins organization without Tony Robbins. My brother is the Tony Robbins of what we were doing. He is the artist. And the way that an artist feels about their business is they feel like it's their baby. Like it's theirs. It's their, they're so in love with it. And they're like, oh, my precious baby. And look at what he built. And what I discovered is that my dad and I were both more entrepreneurial. My dad was between entrepreneur and manager. And I was pure entrepreneur. Like my whole heart needs, like took some little tests that told you this, which was a huge revelation for me. I didn't actually know that about myself at the time. And so discovering that was really important for me because I started realizing I'm really passionate about business. I love the machine. And I remember sitting down one time to my brother and my dad, like when we were first switching over to purely Medicare, and I'm like, I'm starting to get it now. And I said, and at the time I was totally into wheatgrass, and I was like, it's just like a wheatgrass machine. You know, that big metal machine. And I'm like, put brass in one side and you get pure gold out of the other side. But it's like pure gold for your body. And I said, so the machine is what we have, and it shouldn't matter what product or service we're putting into it. We should be able to eke out pure gold out of the other side if we really understand what we're doing, you know? So, so really, I felt like there wasn't much more I could do. My heart wasn't in it because there wasn't much more I felt like I could do. And I felt like I had hit a ceiling personally, mm-hmm. where I'm like, I just want to do more. I want to help more people. And that just wasn't my heart wasn't in it anymore.
Just awesome clarity on that, honestly, Mary. Because I can relate to the machine. Like, it's just so fun, and that's a whole different conversation we could have. But I think it's so fascinating that you were able to have that self awareness and then manage the conversations with your brother and your dad to leave. And it sounds like it was on good terms. The amount of times I felt trapped because I was my duty as a son to stay in the business. And a lot of that is a self-made narrative, full admitted of that. But like, so many families have that, whether it's actually mandated that people stay in to get the inheritance. So it's like, you're just essentially a slave to the business, or you feel like this loyalty that you can't leave. Any thoughts on that topic in general? I mean, because you probably see it in the companies that you're consulting with, or how you guys manage that, where everybody was okay that you didn't have to be an employee here to still be the owner and to still be a family member?
I think, you know, starting EOS was helpful in terms of creating clarity about even the idea of an owner's box and just being clear that that's actually an option. So I think that we now had that structural clarity. Also, I should say too, when we started EOS, you know, you go on the first day, you decide who's the visionary, who's the integrator, who's in the finance seat. And what happens is everybody gets kicked out of their seats. Nobody has a seat. No family member, no one has a seat. And then the whole team puts people back in seats. And so I got put into the visionary seat. I had an integrator, and then my brother was put into the sales seat. And while that's accurate, cause I'm very visionary, my brother is too. And I could see how me being in the seat as a family was never going to happen, because you have those roles in your family. And like, no matter what it was on paper, it was never going to be that in real life. Like, it was just never going to be that way. And it was okay, because my brother was the artist. He wanted this so much more than I did. And this was really his baby. So it was, part of it is kind of bowing out and giving him that, you know, like saying he is a visionary, like he should be here. As far as leaving the business, that's something I'm actually working on right now, a TED Talk on. I'm not prepared to say more about it yet, because it's really deeply personal and challenging. But I really, you know, you have family issues, like you have family history, and that's there. And I actually tried to leave the business 3 times altogether. So I left once when I was 19, I left again when I was 27. And then this last time, and it was funny because I was having coffee with my brother the other day. He's like, but the third time you left, you know, we both just started laughing, because it was never fully going to be my calling. It was my opportunity to learn and grow so that I could go do work somewhere else. Like, it was kind of always that. And that's really challenging to admit, but it's true.
You'll have to keep me and the listeners posted on that TED Talk, because, this podcast was actually titled Life After Business for the first 3 years of the show, because I didn't know, like, I mean, just completely lost. I mean, that's why that book Finish Big I was talking about is because the worst question you can ask an entrepreneur after they've sold is, what do you do? Cause like, I used to be, and it's like no self-worth outside of these, you know, these walls that were whatever the ecosystem called a business, which again, regardless of how many zeros, everybody has, you know, everybody's a person. And so they deal with that in a different way. So I'm really interested to hear, as you process this, what tools you come across, because it's not an easy thing to process.
It's really hard, actually. And it's such a tender place for me right now that, like, I am completely cocooned in my real life. Like, I'm not on social media right now. Like, I'm just taking really, really good care of myself, because it's a really tender experience to You know, you are. So I'm working with Scott Mann of Rooftop Leadership, and he's helping me with my TED Talk. And one of the things that he said is, like, first you have the hero's journey, which I was like, I don't even know what that means. But it's like, hey, you had struggles and you had to overcome them and whatever. Uh-huh. So, like, that's, like, the first thing. Then you kind of become a consultant and you help other people. So that's EOS, and that's really great. He's like, but then there's this archetypal change that you go through to get to this third step, which is really doing the most good, like really just like unzipping and saying, here's what I'm actually here to do. Huh. And that's this next story and hopefully next book. And it's hard, you know, like and I think that so many family businesses have these stories, and I think it'll be helpful. I hope so. Yeah. I'll keep you in touch.
That's awesome. So it's with the book. So you got, maybe give us the overview of the book. You got 7 steps in it. And so the second, take the 7 steps second, but I'm curious, like, what was your intent with the book? Like, when you wrote it and what you want it to be in the world, what's your intent with it?
Well, so I've always, you know, we've talked about being a visionary, and I have a link on my website, marytowteamus.com, and there's a video there of a session that I did where what I was describing is that a lot of visionaries actually come from trauma, and that's why they're visionary, because they had to imagine a better place to get through this existing experience. And then as an adult, that just translates into, this sucks. What else is available? You know?
Yeah, so, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a superpower in one way, but it's also, it also prevents you from being present. You know, there's the other side of that. And so in what I realized is that I've always set goals and have always just figured out where I am, where do I want to be, and just work to close the gap. That's just always how I've operated. My husband, we've done the culture index or predictive index, and like I'm on the vision side, I'm at a 10. On the vision side, he's at a 0. And so what the person said to me is, he's happy to deliver on whatever you see. He's like all about it. He'll support you however. I'm like, oh, and I just thought, like, what do you want? What do you see? And he's like, I got nothing. Like, so then we were creating our 5-year plan together as a family, and he said, he's like, I don't get it. Let's pause. He's like, so you just name something that you want in the future, and then that's it. Like, we just go. And I'm like, oh, that's such a good point.
Yes,
and so, yeah, right. So I had to slow down and think about it. And I had one of my good friends, he's former military. And he was telling me one time that he was trying to teach his wife to shoot. And so he took her out to the shooting range, and he pulled up the rifle, and he's like, okay, here's how you do this. And you load it, and then you shoot. And then he would shoot, and then he would just do some move, and he would reload, and he would shoot. She's like, wait, what are you doing? And he's like, I don't know, I'm just shooting. She's like, but what did you do there? You pulled something out of your thing, and you just, like, reloaded. And he's like, oh, yeah. So I was doing this. And she's like, it's so a part of who you are and what you know that you don't even know the steps of how you do it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah. So that's what's happening here. And I'm having a hard time, like, explaining to my husband, like, the steps. So I created the 7 steps. It's essentially EOS, kind of after the first 3 steps. Uh-huh. But the first 3 steps are, how do you create vision? If you aren't a visionary, how do you create vision for your life? And so I start with Stephen Covey's Begin with the End in Mind, because what do you want to be able to say about your life? Like, who do you want to be there? And what do you want them to be able to say about you and how you spent your time with them and the difference that you had, you know, you made on their life. So starting there, and then backing that into sort of the wheel of life. Tony Robbins has the wheel of life. So it's like, you know, contribution and wealth and health and, you know, family and friends. What on that wheel of life, I actually walk you through a meditation to say, what does that actually look like for you? Like, your level 10 of this and this and this. And in some areas you may be at a 0. You may not have any vision for a certain area of your life. That's okay. It's just kind of waking that part of your brain up to go, what's possible? What do I want? And even just to start to begin to identify it. And then from there, bringing that down into, okay, let's set, if you were to take that, what would you want to accomplish in the next 3 years? Something like that. And what does that look like on the way to that ultimate sort of vision that you see? And then you just work that back into a 1-year plan and then 90 days. And so, and that's where it becomes very EOS-y. But what's funny when I got to EOS is it's everything that I'd always done. So I was like, oh my gosh, it's a framework. I could have never described it. I could have never done what Gino did. it is the most beautiful, simple, perfect system. So I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it's just that simple execution, you know.
But there's a component that you and I had talked about prior to hitting record, which is the first few steps in that book where you're talking about, which is what is your intent and what are you going to be on the right track? Because you can implement a really bad strategy or really bad behaviors really fast with EOS. So you're kind of, you're walking through how to actually get clear on that vision, which is very fascinating, Marie, because I was sitting with my partner, similar example with a story with your brother, where I was talking about like where the business is going to be and all this stuff. And he's like, dude, pause. And he's like, you're watching this movie that I can't even see. And it's 3 years out. And I'm trying to figure out where the popcorn is. So I'm just like, right. And it's just so interesting how different brains are and how different people think. And that's one thing that I've really learned a lot from working with my partner, Pat, where like we think so different, but we are trying to accomplish the same things, that it's an acknowledgement that not everybody thinks the same way you do. And like, not everybody should like assume that they know what you're thinking.
Right. I'd say the number one issue that visionaries have is translating their vision and bridging the gap, because part of the problem is that like, I'm so in the future that I think it's already real and that it's already happening. And I'm confused why you're still over here. And I've done nothing to like create the bridge for you to walk over to where I am. And so that's why Gino Wickman created the Visionary Integrator. It was a beautiful way for him to capture all of the ideas that are, you know, a visionary should be out networking and speaking in Vistage like you're doing. And like, you know, going out into the world and then also learning, not just in our industry, but other industries as well. Like, where is the future of business going? Mm-hmm. Listening to Gary Vee and attending conferences and learning, and then bringing that into the organization and then barfing that all into an integrator who goes, okay, that's no good. That's no good. Yeah. I'll take that. That's no good. And it's your perfect puzzle piece of a partner who can decipher of all the exciting things that you're so excited to talk about. What are the three things that you're bringing into me right now that we can actually take down to the ground and execute as an organization? And so that's what Rocket Fuel is about, the book Rocket Fuel and Rocket Fuel University. It's like, it's this perfect partnership. And the thing that's so perfect about it is we are so opposite. So like, my husband and I have done this. This is great to do with your spouses, because the odds are you're opposite, opposites attract. It shows up in the numbers on Colby, Predictive Index, Enneagram.
100%.
It shows up. And it's a really important thing to do in your marriage to go, oh,
that's why.
I get it. Okay.
Well, and so I think what I'm interested to hear is like, I have huge anxiety about that gap. So like, this is how I've always been, which is why like, I think I could power through and just work and do things. Because I see something and it's like, I'm so far away from it, but it's so clear and I can see every single step. So the only thing is time between me and that, which sucks. And
that pesky thing.
That testy thing. But then it's like, okay, well that, like you mentioned a couple of times in this conversation, that then you're not present. And so like, my constant battle is how to just accept the timeline. And so then it's like the morning routine and the meditation, the working out, just like bang through that anxiety. But it's like, I'm curious on how you handle that, or how, or can you relate either?
Everything you just described. I got up at 3 o'clock this morning, our time, to get in my workout, to get in my meditation. I also do Heart Math Institute, which is like, how do I get into my heart?
Dr. Joe Dispenza and Wim Hof, you know, this morning. Absolutely. Yes.
Exactly. And I have my little monitor that's like, you are out of coherence. But the point of that is that you don't have to hustle. Mm-hmm. You don't have to work as hard. And when we're in that frenetic energy, we're not inviting the best possibility into our reality. So what I'm learning is that the less I push, you know, my coach tells me, his name is Shashin, by the way, he's amazing, Shashin Shah. And what he tells me is, he's like, way to go, Mary. You wrote the book on hashtag keep going, how to keep going. You know how to smash through stuff. You know how to do stuff anyways and to get back up. And he's like, but that's great. That's great skills to have. And it served you. What's your next book? Is it like hashtag stop running? Like, what are you running from? And I'm like, and that's how we came up with the TED Talk, actually. I'm like, oh. And so I'm working with him and another coach, Varad Kogan, who is really the heart math and that like she's teaching me these strategies on emotions and triggers and stuff. And in that process, what I'm learning is that the less I do and the more I just be, the more things just come to me. Like these the perfect opportunities just keep coming to me. And I look at my calendar and I'm like, my assistant scheduled a meeting on my calendar with this person, this person, this person. I'm like, and I'm just looking at the names and I'm thinking, I would have killed to have a meeting with that person 2 years ago. Now I didn't even ask for it. I wasn't even looking for it. And they're there. So it has to do with pausing and slowing down and being clear about what it is that you want. To your point, again, back to drivers. But something I wanted to point out, we talked about earlier, because in my book, it's about your personal life. And Gino Wickman also wrote a book about your life. It's called The EOS Life. And so he's got his own program for that. The point is until you're clear about what you want for your life, and I'm sure you teach this to your entrepreneurs, then how are you supposed to know what you're trying to get out of the business and what you want the business to do for your life? You know, so
I love it.
Then getting on the same page with a spouse or a partner too.
Oh, all the people that are your stakeholders. I mean, like all, and it's not just your business stakeholders, but it's everybody that you interact with on a daily basis. And there's a Yogi Berra quote that I love, which is, if you don't know where you're going, you're going to end up someplace else. And it's just like, wow. Yep. It's like, you just have no idea. Like how, like, and I find it so fascinating how few people do. And it's like, it is so interesting, right? Because you nailed it. We're like, it is like, it's so counterintuitive to just be, especially when you're a hustler and an entrepreneur. And I've experienced a similar thing to you, which is like, I'm just going to smash through as many things as possible. But then, like you said, at some point, like there's always going to be something else to smash through. But at some point you have to kind of like shift that. And it's really difficult. It's like fighting gravity. But then once you kind of can taste it, then it's like, oh, it actually works. And so then you can kind of get the feedback loop going that it's actually going to work and it's not just fake.
Right. It's almost incomprehensible, isn't it? Like you're like, wait a second. So I'm supposed to just set goals and sit on my hands? Like, I don't get it. Like, what does this look like? You know, like, how does this work? And I'm still figuring it out because I don't know. But in the meantime, it's that sort of magical morning routine. Pausing. I've come off of social media, which I have a team that posts, which is great. And it's all my content, but I'm not looking at it. So then there's all of these opportunities throughout the day to just sort of be. And now, like, I forget my phone places now. I'm like, oh, I forgot.
Isn't that nice?
My phone.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
the space, the headspace that you recapture when you lose the addiction of your phone is unreal. And you have space and time to just think and to just be and to imagine what's possible and make connections in your head of like, if I connected that person, that, you know, like whatever it is, it's all there. And I think the more you get away from your computer and your phone and you go out in nature and you go on hikes and you do meditations and all these things, like, you know, Ray Dalio, he's been talking about meditation. He's been doing meditation since he was in college.
For 30 years or whatever. About. I know.
Yeah. And you're like Ray Dalio, like, the most, you know,
robotic people. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like, he's just like a machine.
It.
I don't know.
Mary, this has been so fun. And I think we could probably go for a couple days. That's why we did the little bit of a prep call. I'm going to let you go because you're on the airport. And I got two final questions for you. So the first one is, I love to know what people's definition of intentional is because of the name of the show. And it's very near and dear to my heart and our company's heart. I'm really excited to hear your definition of what intentional means to you.
Intentional means deliberate. It means not, I think it's the difference between being like a plastic bag, like, you know, floating down the street and like being, and saying, I actually have control and I can actually take responsibility. No matter what happened before today, I can take responsibility from what happens from here forward. So maybe the first half of your book was written for you because of parents, people, friends, family, culture, whatever. But once you understand that you can take responsibility and the second half of the book is still blank and that you get to write it, that's intentionality.
I love it. That's fantastic. Second question, where can people find you, your website, the book? What's the best place to reach you?
So my website, and I have a weird name, so I hope you'll post it. I like my name, by the way, but it's also weird. So it's Mary, M-A-R-I. Which is why people are tempted to call me Marie or Mari, but it's Mary, M-A-R-I, And then my last name is Tautimes, TAUTIMES.com. So marytautimes.com. If you just typed in MARITAU, I'm sure it'll come up because no one else has my name. It worked out that way. So
Mary, yeah, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You bet. It's been such a pleasure, Ryan. I will talk to you anytime. I love what you're doing. I think you're doing really incredible work. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about that ahead of time and just keep doing what you're doing. The world needs it.
I appreciate that so much. All right. Have a good flight. See ya.
Thank you.
I hope you took some tidbits out of Marie's story. I mean, oh my gosh, the things that she's doing to keep herself healthy and to keep her head in the game, to be intentional is just something to be it's very admirable. And I am so happy for her and the journey that she's on. I can't wait for that TED talk that she's working on right now. And if there's anything that I would say to take away from this is, you know, the more you know, and the more conscious and self-aware you are, the clearer the decisions are. They're not always easy decisions, but they're clear there are because you understand what's important to you and then how to essentially keep what's important to you at the forefront, like we talked about in that episode. I mean, for her to be able to back away from the family business because she knew that it was not right for her, I mean, it just takes a lot of courage to do that. And I'm very impressed with how they were able to maintain their relationships, keep the business, go through that transaction, all while managing the interpersonal dynamics that I know are extremely hard. So if you wanted to learn more about all these topics, go check out the Intentional Growth Training. Like I said, we've got a virtual cohort coming up, or you can hire me for 4 calls, or you can do it on your own. Go check it out at arcona.io. So with that being said, that's a wrap for this week, and I will see you next week.